Production of Pipe Dreams is made possible in part by funding provided by Mr. and Mrs. Wesley C. Dudley, by a grant from the Mayhead Foundation, and by the support of listeners to stations in the Public Radio International Network.
From Minnesota Public Radio.
B-flat, A, C, B natural. That's a pretty obvious clue, the musical note equivalent to the spelling of Bach, B-A-C-H, and you know who that is. We're listening to the final part of the final part of Bach's contrapuntal masterpiece, The Art of Fugue, a remarkable sequence of increasingly complex intellectual structures where everything is unified and rational, and yet themes overlay themes as emotions build inexorably. It's a case of mathematics made musical, elegant experience arising amidst archaic formulas. Add up the numerological sum of B-A-C-H, get 2, 1, 3, and 8, which totals 14, and 14 is the number of major movements in Bach's Art of Fugue, and it was with this 14th fugue, where he spells out his name, that we ended our previous program. Today we follow the trail to its logical and surprising conclusion. And the clues are on our website at pipedreams.org. Watch there and listen here as we discover four miniatures which live in a small corner of this fugal masterpiece. Items not quite so simple as row, row, row your boat, but built in that same rudimentary manner. These four canons prove that even simple things can be imponderable. We'll also explore the art of Bach in several other works, which exploit physical as well as intellectual agility. And we'll listen to three audacious yet respectful organists as they expand on an opportunity that they could not ignore, creating completions to Bach's last legendary unfinished movement from the Art of Fugue, where he sets us adrift, they come to the rescue, and meet Bach's challenge with skill and grace. It's an adventure awaiting our involvement. Make a getaway into an incredible realm of unbridled imagination where heart and mind are one. The Art of Fugue is the art of Bach, and the Art of Fugue is also the art of escape. Play along. I'm Michael Barone, and you're tuned to Pipe Dreams. But first, let's recall that Bach, in addition to being the foremost composer of his day and the brainiest intellect in the musical world, also was the foremost organist and a virtuoso whose commanding and original use of the King of Instruments set and sets him apart from all others. By way of example of both the brain and the brawn of Bach, let's listen to this stupendously energetic toccata and fugue, which he wrote in the luminous and expansive key of F major. Listen for fancy footwork in two big pedal solos at the beginning of the toccata, and then follow along the fugue in three sections, the first two of which introduce totally independent subjects or themes and work them out, and then the third weaves those two themes together into a perfect blend, like scotch and soda. Randy Bourne plays for us at Maternity of Mary Church in St. Paul on a small but feisty cassavant organ designed by Gert Brunsema. It's one of my favorites. Hang on. This is Bach the Energizer, his toccata and fugue in F major.
Thank you.
Not only is that one of the most brilliant and intelligent of Bach's organ works, but it is unique, too, in that the toccata is the longest single movement that Bach wrote for the organ, and the fugue is his only authentic double fugue specifically for this instrument. Just to keep you on the up and up, a double fugue is one with two themes, each of which is worked out separately, and then the two combined in the final part of the piece. Extraordinary. William Randolph Bourne was our soloist, playing the 1976 Brunzima Cassavant organ at Maternity of Mary Catholic Church in St. Paul. It's an astonishing little instrument, and you never heard more than 13 stops playing at once. Well, Bach, for all of his imagination and originality, was good because he worked hard and understood pretty much everything there was to know about music, not only of his time, but of times previous. Bach studied the concertos of Vivaldi, which were all the rage then, but also the motets of Palestrina from many generations before, and the keyboard suites of François Couperin from that altogether very different musical milieu in France. Bach absorbed these examples from other composers, and sometimes actually directly borrowed their notes. And that's what happens in this piece, which is a transcription by Bach for organ of a harpsichord movement by Couperin from a collection titled The Nations. It's an effortless little aria which Olivier Vernet plays on the instrument built in 1991 by Bernard Aubertin for the Church of St. Louis in Vichy. This is Bach with a French twist. French Bach if you will, or at least Bach's arrangement of some French music, a movement by François Couperin, there transformed by Bach into an aria for organ, which Olivier Vernet played. We think of Bach as the grand master of organ music, forgetting that he achieved that stature relatively early in his career. The majority of Bach's most popular pieces date from his years as court organist in Weimar, beginning around 1708, when he would have been in his 20s. Even works which, towards the end of his life, Bach further refined and collected together as exemplars of his skill, originated in those Weimar days. Gerhard Weinberger plays one of those on the Pentecost hymn, Come Holy Spirit. It's a literal whirlwind of creative energy. we're getting in touch with sources. That organ was built in 1732 by Gottfried Silbermann, whose work Bach very much respected and whose instruments Bach played upon on numerous occasions. They probably shared a few beers together talking about how things ought to be. That Silbermann organ was at St. Peter's Church in Freiberg, near Dresden, and on it Gerhard Weinberger performed Bach's vibrant setting of the Pentecost hymn, Come Holy Spirit, Lord God. Did you realize that the chorale theme was played by the feet? And we think that being light-fingered is a help to the organist. Bach is so good at creating incredibly difficult puzzles and then wiggling out of them. Delving back into the art of the fugue in a moment, I'm Michael Barone with more on Bach and the art of escape on this edition of Pipe Dreams. Now, this might seem a little absurd, but we're doing this for important scientific data gathering. So, ready, guys? I've got Brad Althoff and James Richter here in the studio with me. We're all music majors, believe it or not. Okay, here we go. Ready? Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 merrily. Merrily, merrily, row your boat gently down the stream. Gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. Don't we wish? And while that little example there comes nowhere near the quality of a piece by Bach, which we're about to hear, it does prove that we all know what the musical term canon means, and that's spelled C-A-N-O-N, by the way. And that was one, a piece made up of a single tune which, when layered upon itself, creates mellifluous counterpoint and harmony. Well, sort of. Bach included four canons in the context of his Art of Fugue. They seem to be rather lightweight, certainly next to the big fugues in that piece, but as you will hear, they are not ephemeral. You might profit by taking a glimpse at our webpage devoted to the Art of Fugue, where you can see the themes of these canons, and then listen as we wind through them. We're at pipedreams.org. on the World Wide Web. Bach possibly planned to have 14 canons along with the 14 fugues in the Art of Fugue, sort of as palate cleansers, but he left us only four. They're really brainy and delightful little items, derived, like everything else in the Art of Fugue, from the single original Art of Fugue theme. The first canon is listed as in hypodiapason, which is just a fancy way of saying it's a canon in which the second voice follows the first voice at the separation of an octave. The right hand starts, in this case, on the A above middle C, and the left hand joins beginning on the A below middle C, one octave apart. But each hand is playing the identical line of notes, absolutely exact in its melodic contour, the one compared with the other. Keep row, row, row your boat in mind as you follow the progress of this first canon from Bach's Art of Fugue.
Thank you.
real delight. You could imagine kids jumping rope or doing a skipping dance around the room to that little charmer. It's the first of four canons which Bach incorporated into his Art of Fugue. Lynn Ziegler played the John Brumbaugh organ at Iowa State University in Ames. Thank you, Lynn. The second canon, and there are four, we'll hear them all today, is labeled Alla Duodecima Contrapunto Alla Quinta, which means, basically, at the interval of the 12th, or an octave and a fifth, so that the first voice begins on the D below middle C, and then the answer commences on the A above middle C, 12 notes apart. It's a jaunty little number here, too. Louis Thierry plays for us. There to another of the canons from Bach's Art of Fugue, performance by Louis Thierry on the Silbermann organ reconstructed by Alfred Kern at St. Thomas Church in Strasbourg. The third canon is a bit more abstruse. It's titled Alla Decima Contrapunto Alla Terza, which means that the canonic imitation follows the opening theme at the interval of the tenth, an octave and a third. And that essentially means that the left hand starts off playing in D minor, while the right hand begins in F major, which is a rather interesting trick if you think about it. Charles Ives would be proud. Thierry Mechler plays on the Mühlhausen organ at St. Nicholas Church in Waalbeck, Germany.
Thank you.
odd little thing chasing its tail. That was the third canon from Bach's Art of Fugue, a piece which took a simple notion and showed just how complex its implications could be. Terry Mechler performed. And even more complex is the fourth and final canon from Art of Fugue, which is listed as being in hypodiatessaron. I'm not sure that that is a direct translation of what I'm going to tell you, but basically the opening theme in this piece will be chased by its mirror image, which is to say upside down, but that mirror image is also going at half speed. And then in the middle of the piece, the voices exchange, and the fast line, which had formerly been in the top voice, moves to the bottom, and the slow line moves to the top. We're a long way from row, row, row your boat, Dorothy. Bernard Lagasse plays on the Baccarat organ at Immaculate Conception Church in Montreal. and home again unscathed, with a knotty problem resolved. Bernard Lagasse has been demonstrating the muscle, evident even in a two-part canon. Canon number 4 from The Art of Fugue. I suppose you do need muscle to row, row, row your boat in that manner. Our website has a complete playlist for today's program with interesting links. Learn about the music you're hearing, see some of the instruments, and generally be visually distracted while you listen. We're at pipedreams.org. And I'm Michael Barone, following Bach wherever he goes. The Art of Fugue is, after all, the art of escape on this edition of Pipe Dreams. Frustrating it is to hear the music peter out. Remember, Bach left The Art of Fugue unfinished. He had a plan, but he didn't live to fulfill it, and we don't know exactly what he had in mind. Only that when his son Carl Philipp Emanuel gathered together the manuscript pages which were to become The Art of Fugue, and published them in 1751, the year after his father's death, that most complex fugue appeared, as we've heard it, with an apology. The late composer of the present work has been prevented by the ailment affecting his eyes and by his death, which followed shortly after, from completing the last fugue. Something of an understatement, to be sure. And whether that's the truth of the matter, or whether Bach had finished this piece on another scrap of manuscript, or even that he intended this to be the final work in Art of Fugue, or that this incompletion was perhaps a suggestion that we might pick up the strands and move ahead, all of that is conjecture. Some prefer to leave things as they are and believe the easy evidence. Others enjoy a good challenge. Donald Francis Tovey, writer on music from not so long ago, studying Bach's torso, a musical one, not the actual corpus delicti, but looking at that incomplete fugue, imagined a continuation which would require some 100 additional measures to balance out what had come before and to work through all of the implications of what Bach did leave us. So when Helmut Walscher first recorded Art of Fugue in 1956, he left the piece unfinished. But after considerable thought, in 1970, having wrestled with the problem for years, Helmut Walscher picked up where Bach left on and gave us this. impressive and quite Bach-like, but not Bach. That was Helmut Walscher's realization of the incomplete final contrapuntis from Bach's Art of Fugue. It is one of the best completions available, and Walscher's performance of it, recorded in 1970 at the Church of St. Peter the Younger in Strasbourg, does have its sense of overwhelming conviction. Walscher is not alone in having tackled this mystery. When Swiss organist Lionel Rogge pondered the matter upon his recording of the Art of Fugue at St. Peter's Cathedral in Geneva, his initial intention was to leave off, as Walscher had, where Bach did, but then producer Brian Culverhouse got wind that Lionel Rogge had worked up a possible finale and coaxed him to tape it as an appendix in the album. And this is what that sounds like. So there we have another way of skinning the cat or gilding the lily, pick your metaphor, Lionel Rogge playing his own completion to Bach's incomplete contrapuntis number 14 from The Art of Fugue. It is quite compelling, too, though Mr. Rogge admits that his is something of a stopgap measure, by no means the ultimate. Is there an ultimate? Can we imagine anyone other than Bach writing an appropriate conclusion to this movement of his, which in its four parts was to provide the technical and emotional climax to 75 preceding minutes of the most intense fugal counterpoint. Too much to ask of anyone, maybe even of Bach. Well, I'm not a scholar, and my overall knowledge of the Art of Fugue is maybe only slightly greater than yours, if that. But when I first heard Michael Ferguson's completion of this extraordinary piece, it just felt right. Maybe it's the way he plays it with such assurance, even a little bit of bravado. When it's time to introduce the fourth theme, which was to happen just at the point beyond where Bach's original manuscript drops off, things become extraordinarily dramatic. We listen and are amazed and delighted, and at the end want to shout bravo, because this has not been a test question dutifully responded to, and Bach has not escaped from us here. We have found him and brought him home. This is an affirmation. This is the prize awarded and applauded. Listen, as we take Contrapunctus 14 straight from the top and all the way through to its rightful end, Michael Ferguson embraces Bach at House of Hope Presbyterian Church in St. Paul. When the French say to make a fugue, they mean to take a trip or to scram out of here, and Michael Ferguson certainly has taken us on a trip to the limits of possibility. His original and profoundly enjoyable conclusion to Bach's unfinished Contrapuntus 14 from The Art of Fugue. To make a fugue is never an easy process, to make them as Bach does, and to carry on in Bach's spirit. That's to take the French at their word, to momentarily transcend the mundane and to get away, to make an escape into a heaven of pure, intelligent goodness. Thank you, Michael Ferguson, for bravery accomplished, bringing Bach home again. Since last week's broadcast, there's actually been quite a bit of emailed conversation about The Art of Fugue. Friedrich Sprondel summed it up well. He said, "It's neither magic nor mythic, neither a puzzle nor a phone book. It's pretty darn bloody amazingly well composed and incredibly beautifully sounding counterpoint. But to arrive at this, Bach needed a lifetime of hard work, study, practice, and experience. The Art of Fugue is not a miracle. It is an achievement, and an extraordinary one." When The Art of Fugue was published by Bach's son, Carl Philipp Emanuel, to make up for what Bach had left undone and what Michael Ferguson had not yet done, a chorale prelude was inserted in the volume's final pages, a chorale prelude ostensibly dictated by Bach on his deathbed. Actually, it is a piece which he had written some years before, but one where here he changed the title from When in the Hour of Deepest Need to something more poetically appropriate, considering this last moment. What Bach sings here is titled Before Thy Throne I Now Appear. it's touching to think of that as Bach's final gesture, his setting of the hymn, Before Thy Throne I Now Do Stand, his deathbed chorale, if we're to believe the legends, and why not? Certainly something as sweetly subtle as that was all that Bach would need as an entry pass to the gates of heaven. The final gesture in his practice of the art of escape. No one has surpassed Bach. Many have done well, most have done differently. None have equaled him at the contrapuntal game. His music is not an end, though, as was lamented upon his demise. It's certainly not a dead end. Mozart and Beethoven and Brahms and many others grew exponentially from their studies of Bach. Bach is like a fertilizer for other hungry plants. After him there has been no other, but after him everything is richer. His perfection of the art of fugue in its composition, and our perfection of the art of fugue in our comprehension of it, well, this becomes the very best sort of realization of the art of escape. Though there really is no escaping Bach, is there? Do check our website for a detailed playlist of the artists involved in today's presentation. We're at pipedreams.org. Look under program number 2030. We list sources for the recordings that we've presented here and other further background and insights on the art of fugue. You can even listen to the program again. We're at pipedreams.org. But if you're not a web browser, we'll at least give you a list of the performers involved. If you write to us, ask for a sample of our quarterly brochure, and write to us at Pipe Dreams, 45 East 7th Street, St. Paul, Minnesota 55101. Do please send a stamped, self-addressed envelope for the return mail. Our broadcasts are made possible by the generosity of Mr. and Mrs. Wesley C. Dudley, by a grant from the Mayhad Fund of the HRK Foundation, and by listener supporters of this station and Public Radio International affiliates nationwide. He is everywhere around us. There is no music in which Bach is not a principal. I'm Michael Barone for Pipe Dreams. Thank you for listening. Pipe Dreams is a production of Minnesota Public Radio.
PRI, Public Radio International.